thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole here, my boy Will T. What's going on, Will T?
Nothing much, sir. How are you?
I'm good, man. You know, exciting times. I mean, the Super Bowl Sunday just passed. Ray Jeezy's out too, as well. Want to make sure I add that in.
Okay, Super Bowl just passed, so are you about to start your state of depression because it's no more football for, what, like
we got
30,
the XFL.
For 30 weeks?
We got the XFL.
No, well, I won't disrespect those men and say, you know, that's not professional football.
Yeah, but, exactly. You know. I mean, hopefully it won't be like what we had while we were in college back in the day, you know what I mean? Like, hopefully. I know you're going to say, well,
Outlaw.
Outlaw. Hey, man, them jerseys were dope, though, man.
I mean, DC
Defenders, man.
We're all entitled to our opinion, my friend.
I got to go, you know, I mean, football is done. Now I'm forced to watch basketball again. I'm not going to lie. It's been hard to watch basketball since Kobe passed. Am I like, I mean, I took, for some strange reason, I'm taking it real hard.
No, there's nothing wrong with taking, you know, his untimely passing hard.
Yeah.
But. I just don't understand you people, and by you people, I'm about to explain what I say, what I mean by you people,
mm-hmm.
but people who are just who don't get into basketball until after the new year or after.
Oh, no, that's not, you know, I mean, I'm into basketball. No, I've been into basketball the whole year. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the passing has kind of like dulled me into watching. You know what I mean? Like I've taking a break and watching basketball.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with, like, I've been into the season. I've liked all the storylines. My issue was a bit, but when Kobe passed, it was like, man, I don't even want to watch basketball because, you know, you're like, dang, you know what I'm saying? Mamba's not around.
I get it.
You know what I
mean? Understand it.
You know what I'm saying? All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
All right, here's what we have on tap. The Kansas City Chiefs winning Super Bowl 54, 31-20. Sports journeys and the 3-point conversions. Carita Parks will join the show to discuss this at 8:30. We'll debate if Bradley Beal was really snubbed by not making the All-Star team at 8:40. We'll examine the rest of the NBA All-Star game reserves. Finally, at 8:50, we'll talk about Ryan Zimmerman re-signing with the Washington Nationals. Talk Nats own Kevin Nibley will be on to discuss this. But first, right now, we have Sports Journeys and the 3-point conversions own sports reporter Carita Parks on the line. What's going on, Carita?
Hey, what's up?
What's up? Glad to have you back on.
Hey, Miss Parks.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
My man Will said, hey, Miss Parks.
Hey. All
right. Starting off on a good foot.
Was it Happy New Year, right? We didn't have her on, like, this is the first, right? Happy New Year to Miss Parks.
I think this is the first show in the new year. Wait, no.
No.
We talked about Revere in the new year, didn't
That's true.
We?
That's true. Real talk. Yep. That's true. Yep. I got to make sure I get all my Happy New Year's out. I just got to make sure.
I mean, bro, you are a month late.
I know, bro. I've been very late.
Better late than never, I suppose.
I agree. Yes, right. That's right. I was trying to be considerate. That's all.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Carita, you were down at the Super Bowl. How was it? The whole event, the whole week. How was it?
It was great. It was so nice to see two fresh teams at Super Bowl. I mean, think about how long it's been since we have not seen a Super Bowl with the Patriots. So that was the first win. Miami, I mean, beautiful. The weather was great. I think when it did rain, it was at night. The event, it seemed like that was the sexiest Super Bowl I've been to, I would say.
The
events, just where they had the events, how they had everything set up. I mean, it's Miami. They came through.
The sexiest Super Bowl. Wow. Okay.
The sexiest. Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't a description I thought I would hear from
and
you.
And I'm not talking about just people. I just mean like
the whole environment.
You go to the event, the venue, the vibe. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned that this was the first Super Bowl in a while that we haven't seen the Patriots in. Do you think this is do you think that we will see a subsequent run with the Patriots not in the Super Bowl going forward with Patrick Mahomes kind of emerging, you know?
I mean, right now, if you look at it, not just because they won the Super Bowl, I mean, they are probably one of the best teams in the AFC. Mm-hmm. But I think Baltimore is still in play.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Lamar Jackson is going to learn from what happened this year. I think that he kind of lost his poise a little bit, but that comes from being a young quarterback. So I think Baltimore's still in play. I don't think it's a guarantee that Kansas City is going to go back-to-back Super Bowls. It's possible, but I do think there were some teams that started to emerge, but Baltimore definitely is, like I said, still in play on the AFC side. NFC side, you know, I definitely, I mean, they've actually been the divisions that always rotate anyway.
Yeah.
You haven't seen many dynasties such as the Patriots on the NFC side.
Agreed. Yeah, you use like it's a recycle in the NFC West, it seems like. So I'm gonna get off topic, not off topic, still on Super Bowl topic, but in terms of Miami, mm-hmm. you know I love Miami, man. All right, so,
so, most men.
Like most men, you know this. All right, so it's gonna be player induced. So I mean, so we're a lot of like the players on the strip of Miami. Like I wanted to like think about it. All right, you in Miami, you know what I'm saying? You supposed to be focused on the Super Bowl. Did any individuals seem like they didn't give a you know what about the game? They was all about the Miami streetlights.
Are you talking about the guys?
The players. The players.
From the team, though.
Yeah, from the teams. Yeah, from the team.
No, I didn't see them on the strip. I'm not saying they. I think someone told me one of the teams was out, but not on the strip necessarily. Okay. So I didn't see any of the players on the strip. So if they were doing something, first of all, the Chiefs were way out in like Aventura.
Okay.
So it was going to take them a minute to get in. The 49ers were downtown. I think they were the team that someone told me they were out.
Yeah, that's what I
see. But not on the strip. I can't remember what they told me they were doing. But I will say I didn't see any of the players out on the strip.
Well, hopefully none of them were pulling a Eugene Robinson when they were in Miami. Let me ask you this. Kyle Shanahan, you know, this is the second time he's been in a Super Bowl. You know, first time as a head coach, one time as the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. Do you think that now, you know, with the results that both of his teams have, they were on the end of a loss, and you know, some people will say, you know, they were up, but they, you know, Kyle Shanahan's play calling, excuse me, is the primary reason why they lost. Do you think this affects him going forward from a play calling standpoint, and do you think he'll be able to rebound?
I think you can always rebound, but this is going to really stick with him, I think, for a while, right? Because the fact that he was the offensive coordinator when they blew the lead, when Atlanta blew that lead against New England, and they weren't in the lead quite as much in this particular Super Bowl, but they were up by 10, and he really got away from his game. He put it in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands, but that's not how they've been winning all season. They've been winning because they've been using the run game. So why he went away from that, I don't know. I think that both of these Super Bowls are going to stick with him until he wins. But until then, people are going to look at him like a choke artist.
Strong words.
It is. I mean, it's funny.
It's real.
Well, you
have to give Kansas City credit. And it's not all on Kyle Shanahan, though, because Jimmy Garoppolo, he missed a wide open Kittle on like a 3rd and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then he overthrew Emmanuel Samuels on a play where that would have been a touchdown. Yeah. There was no one in front of him.
Yeah, that's true.
And the defender was really nowhere near him. He just overthrew, and he had some turnovers. So, it's not all on Kyle Shanahan, but he did change his play calling, which didn't help either.
It's funny how, you know, a Super Bowl will validate a coach or a player from this perspective. Andy Reid, we all know, you know, he went to the NFC Championship game four times in a row in Philadelphia, getting the one Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They lost to the Patriots. He's had many other opportunities in the playoffs to get to a Super Bowl, and he hasn't. But he gets this one win, and now people are kind of cementing him as a Hall of Fame coach.
We talked about this last week.
it's just funny how the person, and now Patrick Mahomes, you know, people were, you know, one of the storylines that was coming out of the Super Bowl was, you know, Patrick Mahomes is early in his career like Dan Marino was, and Dan Marino got there one time and wasn't able to get back.
I can't hear the question.
Oh, no, from your perspective, do you think that this Super Bowl win cements Andy Reid as one of the top coaches in the NFL?
I'm not hearing anything, guys.
Can you hear it now?
Yeah.
All right, so go ahead, Will.
Okay, my bad. Do you think this Super Bowl win cements Andy Reid as one of the top elite coaches in the NFL?
Did she hear?
I think it does put him as one of the elite coaches in the NFL. I think anytime you win a Super Bowl, like you said, that kind of validates you as a coach. And I mean, he had to work hard to get this. And if Andy Reid, he's a good coach all his career, but he just hasn't been able to make it. Like you said, he made just that one Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He just hasn't been able to get over that hump. And unfortunately, in the NFL, you could be a good coach, but you're really not validated until you get that Super Bowl. But so now that he's gotten that Super Bowl, I definitely think it puts him up there with the elite coaches.
Definitely. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have Sports Journeys and 3-Point Conversions, Carita Parks, on the line. So, Carita, you saw Patrick Mahomes. We're talking about Patrick Mahomes. You saw how he started the game kind of, you know, off. Did you think initially watching, did he look nervous to you before he just got hot?
I don't think he was nervous. I think that San Francisco's defense was putting the pressure on him. That pass rush was coming at him, and I think that they were doing what they wanted to do from the forefront of getting him off his game.
Mm-hmm.
But as Patrick Mahomes always does, he finds a way to win, and that's what he did. He capitalized on the mistakes the 49ers started to make and was able to bring his team back into the game. I don't think it was nerves, though. I think that, like I said, the San Francisco was putting pressure on him.
So what do you think changed in terms of that fourth quarter? Was like, all right, do you feel like, you know, Pat Mahomes was like, all right, it's on me, now I got to step up? Or was it just more maybe the Niners, you know, choked? What do you think, you know, happened in that quarter, in that fourth quarter?
Well, one, the 49ers started making mistakes. Mm-hmm. They were going 3-and-out. So they were giving the Chiefs more chances to come back. Also, Patrick Mahomes, he made two major mistakes. He threw two interceptions, and they were bad throws. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first one was terrible. The second one, I think the defender actually just read the ball really well. So I think Patrick Mahomes knew that he had to step up because he made those two huge mistakes that helped his team. They kind of contributed to the fact that his team was down. So I do think it was a combination of both. He was able to capitalize because San Francisco wasn't doing what they needed to do to continue to increase the lead. But great quarterbacks find a way to win, and he did.
Sure did. All right, so I'm gonna put this out there. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl, but let's simplify. What do you think happened more? The Chiefs won this bowl, like they took and they won, or the Niners just choked because they were up 10, had momentum, run that football. You know, game seems to be over the way Kyle Shanahan runs the football.
I think the Chiefs won.
Okay, all right, they won. All right, no choke artists. No, all right.
I mean, there was definitely some choking involved, but like I said, there were times in that fourth quarter where the 49ers couldn't convert. So they went 3-and-out a few times, and I wouldn't say that was necessarily choking. If you look at it, Kansas City's defense, they stepped up when they needed to step up the most. Chris Jones, he had two tips on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
There was an interception. So Kansas City ended up stepping up when they needed to, but what happened is the 49ers, they lost steam at the worst possible time. So that's why I say Kansas City won, because they did step up when they needed to, but on both defense and offense.
Karita, let's stay right there with the 49ers. We've seen throughout, you know, the history of the Super Bowl, oftentimes the loser of the Super Bowl, they have a hangover, and it's hard for them to get back to that to the next Super Bowl, right? This San Francisco team, they seem very young, even though they have a quarterback that they're, in my opinion, they're overpaying. What does this team need to do to kind of reload and bring them and get themselves back to the Super Bowl next year? I know this is a way too early question to ask, but I'm going to ask it.
Well, like you said, they are a young team. And, I mean, if you look at the 40, it's a mental thing, right? If you look at the 49ers, in my opinion, they still have a lot of good pieces in place. They didn't lose this game because they were missing something in particular. You know how some teams need to add a pass rusher or some teams need to add a running back. No, I mean, they have all the talent on their team. Now, I do think what they're going to have to do with Jimmy Garoppolo is I think he needs a little bit more work because clearly he works better when the run game is in effect. But if you put the game in his hands, I mean, his pass, he was missing passes. He was fumbling the ball, turning it over. So I think that Jimmy needs actually some more work than we might have thought.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, like I said, they have a lot of good pieces in place.
Yeah, Jimmy needs to stop hanging out with porno stars. That's what
he's doing. Yeah, he needs to focus.
He needs to focus, man. Jimmy, think his mind's in the clouds.
He was exposed in that fourth quarter.
I agree, his mind's in the clouds.
Jimmy Garoppolo hangs out with porn stars?
Yeah, he be dating porn stars, bro. You ain't know that?
No.
Oh, Jimmy get
it. Yeah, he sure was.
Jimmy be getting it, wow, bro. Okay. Jimmy live that life. Yeah, man. Jimmy, hey, Jimmy got that swag, bro. Jimmy, he about that life, bro.
I never knew.
That's what the ladies love Jimmy G.
They do. Real talk. Hey, I'm on social media. Ladies love Jimmy G. They love Jimmy G. And they love the new Kansas City tight end. They love Travis Kelce too.
Okay.
They love Travis. Travis Kelce like a black. He a black white boy though.
For sure.
I'm just gonna keep that a buck. All right. So Karita, I'm
asking. He got that bass in his voice.
Exactly right. Yeah, he got that twang in his voice. So real quick. It's a serious question right now. Real serious. Uh-huh. Like, I'm real serious. All right.
Okay.
All right. Shakira, J-Lo, halftime show. Your thoughts on it? I'm pro Shakira on that show, period. I wasn't feeling J-Lo, but I was feeling Shakira. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't really feeling J-Lo. But I want to know your opinion about the halftime show.
The halftime show was very entertaining. I think if you thought that, like, you were going to get singing, I mean, I don't think Shakira nor J-Lo is really known for their singing.
Yeah.
So I believe that they gave us exactly what they're known for, which is that entertainment aspect. It was very theatrical. Mm-hmm. The dancing, I mean, I like for, I guess, the Latina women and just the Hispanic culture in general. I mean, I know that was a very proud moment for them to have two Latina women headlining the Super Bowl show. So from a historical perspective, I can respect it. And it was entertaining.
It was.
Like I said, I don't think you're going to get the singing from them, but it was definitely an entertaining halftime show.
Yeah, I was entertained by Shakira.
Now, tell me, what was it about the J-Lo part that you didn't like?
I don't know. I expected more from J-Lo. I don't know.
See, the only thing I was disappointed about the J-Lo's set was, you know, she came into music with a hip-hop sound, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's true. That's
don't just alienate that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're in Miami. You know, you could have incorporated that in. And plus, I'm also mad that... Plus, I'm also mad they didn't incorporate Uncle Luke into the halftime show.
Me too. I agree.
You know they weren't going to incorporate Uncle Luke.
You could have found a way to do it.
What about Trick? You know what I'm saying? I know Trick got some issues, but dang, you can't put Trick in it.
Well, hey, to be fair, DJ Khaled was the pregame DJ.
He
threw in some Uncle Luke. He had Trick Daddy playing.
Oh,
so DJ Khaled, he represented.
But we don't pay. We want halftime. We don't pay to the pregame.
I know. But to be fair, I think J-Lo's show probably was weaker because I think I said this to you.
Yeah.
I said that she has to be more Latina than hip hop because you know she's Jenny from the Block. She wasn't Jenny from the Block that night.
Yeah, she wasn't.
So I think that that was. I don't care. She may be Spanish, but that's just not really what she usually comes with anyway.
Agreed.
She kind of had to change her focus that night. Yeah,
She was acting like Jenny with A-Rod, Jenny with P. Diddy. You know what I'm saying? You act like you P. Diddy. Jenny with Diddy. Hey, Karina, before I let you go, hey, how can our listeners catch your content on Sports Journey and the 3-Point Conversion?
Yes, so you can catch my content, like you said, on 3pointconverting.com, sportsjourney.com, and I also contribute to ProPlayerInsiders.com. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on social media at Karina C. Parks, and that is my Twitter handle.
Hey, Karina, thanks for being on. You know we appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Love being on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ms. Parks.
You're welcome.
Bye, Ms. Parks.
Bye.
Oh, that is the cool Karina Parks. Talk to you later. Cool Karina Parks from Sports Journey and the 3-Point Conversion. Make sure you check her out. Make sure you follow her on Twitter. All right. We'll keep the Super Bowl talk going after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Time after time, I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few. I've had my share of kicking my face, but I've come through.
We go on and on.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy's out. All right, for you, Will T, what was the game-changing play in Super Bowl 54?
Game-changing play.
Yeah.
Like Karita stated, you know, that that pass to, I believe it was Emmanuel Sanders when George Kittle on 3rd and 5 was wide open. If he had just waited a little bit,
gotcha.
That would have prolonged the drive.
Or rather going to the bomb, you're talking about. Okay.
That would have prolonged the drive and would have allowed you to eat more clock.
Yeah.
Would allow the 49ers to, you know, do what they've done best, which is Kyle Shanahan, run scheme.
Yeah.
And then you would have been able to work in some play action off of that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's one of the bigger plays. But also, and maybe this is just my perception. Maybe I'm wrong about this.
Mm-hmm.
But when Jimmy Garoppolo threw that first interception to Bashaud Breeland,
Bree, friend of the show.
to me, I got a sense that he was kind of like, all right, you know. I messed up, you know.
He was good after that, though.
I mean, he seemed a little. And maybe it was the prep. Maybe Kansas City was the pressure was getting to him. Mm-hmm. That Kansas City was applying. But to me, it's kind of his demeanor changed slightly.
I thought he was okay after the pick. I thought he had a rhythm in the first half. To me, the game changed. The game changed the play was that, you know, I believe. They just had the pick. I want to say they just had the pick. I'm not the pick. I want to say it was 20. Well, it was second and hey, they were trying to ice the game. They ran the ball off. It was a five yard gain. I want to say it was when it was 20-17. I want to say it was 20-17. Had a 5 yard gain. Then they followed that up. With a passing play, and I'm thinking to myself like, all right, you pass the ball. That's what Chris Jones, he bats the ball down, and I'm thinking to myself, yo, like this is San Francisco, like Kyle Shanahan, run the football, like you're averaging over five yards and plus a pop anyway. Why are you not running the football?
Uh-huh.
Run the football. You don't. You haven't trusted. There was a game in the postseason where Jimmy G threw the ball 8 times. So your ego isn't like, it's not an ego thing. Like, you're cool with running the football. Do what you do best. Run the football. He tries to pass the ball. Was batted down. Then they brought pressure, and they had to punt the ball, giving Patrick Mahomes the opportunity to come back. So I'm thinking I'm like, you had an opportunity to ice the game. I think it was 20-10. I think it was 20-10 at that time. You had to pick. They had that pick. You had a chance to end it, dead the game, over, and you just didn't. I thought that was a big play. In terms of play calling, I thought it was a big point in the game.
Well, let me ask you this. We know that a lot of coaches get criticized for being conservative in that spot, right? Mm-hmm. If they do go on to lose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe Kyle Shanahan's thinking is, all right, I know that they're expecting the run.
Yeah,
they're going to load up on the run.
Agreed.
I trust my quarterback. Agreed. I'm going to put it in my quarterback's hands because I know I have the trust that he'll make the right read and make the right play.
But it goes to, like, do what you do best. That's one thing I like about, the Bill Parcells, the Joe Gibbs of the world, coaches that we grew up watching, right? Even like Bill Walsh, like, it wasn't about trying to outsmart your competition. Like, you got to stop it. We're gonna run this play. You haven't shown us you can stop it the whole game. Stop it. Like that. That's what makes those coaches great. But then you get to a point. You get other coaches who try to do what? Try to outsmart the opposition rather than just beat flat out. Do what's best for the team to win the game. You know what I mean? Like, you have people who think they're like Marks to the world.
Okay, so I think this is a interesting retort to your opinion. Andy Reid. One of the things that he's been killed for up until this point was his clock management. People still may be critical of his clock management. We've seen games where he's been up, and we know that Andy Reid, the kind of thing that he specializes is West Coast offense, short passing, not really emphasizing the run. Mm-hmm. So when he's been up, he's continued to pass,
yeah.
Right? But there's also people who will criticize him because, running isn't traditionally one of the things they do well, but he'll pass and not run. So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
But Andy in this game, I thought, and then he tried to run the football. Like, he was running, he ran the ball a lot in this game, in the Super Bowl.
I ain't going to say he ran. He picked great. He maximizes opportunities with running the ball.
Yeah, and I think he tried to show balance. To me, I think, you have coaches who overthink everything, and they try to outsmart the opposition rather than just doing what works. You go with what's the strength of your team. Like the Tennessee Titans, you're not going to tell Tannehill at that situation when you got Travis, Derrick Henry. Hey, we're going to put on Tannehill's back. No, you won't get the ball to Derrick Henry. It's the same thing. Shanahan has a dominant running game. It is what it is. The Chiefs aren't world beaters on defense. They're a good defense. They're a solid defense, but they're not world beaters. They're not the Baltimore Ravens. They're not They're not the San Francisco 49ers. The Chiefs' defense is solid. I'm not knocking their defense. It's solid. So you got one of the best running games in the whole NFL, and you're telling me, and you got a quarterback who we all know isn't a dude that you look at as a guy who's going to win you a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you got a running game that could win you a game. Why go away from that? When you want to ice the game, because we watch 90s football, right? What do you do to ice a game when you got
the lead? You run the ball.
That's what I'm saying. And you put your quarterback in a 3rd-and-5 situation.
But on certain occasions, in certain positions on the field, the analytics will tell you a short pass is better than a run when you know that the defense is loaded up on the box.
But it goes to who your quarterback is. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the question. If we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, or we're talking about I guess that's too high. If we're talking about
Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I agree. You can do that because you trust Matt Stafford. But he's still a good quarterback. He's a guy that you trust to win you a game. You still trust him to win you a game.
Okay.
When you talk about Jimmy G, an adequate quarterback. I'm not saying he's a poor quarterback. He's still a decent quarterback. You don't look at him like, all right, you're gonna win me the game. I don't want you to mess this up. You know what I'm saying? When you can trust your running game.
All right, let me ask you one more question, and it pertains to Jimmy G.
Yeah.
I think it's obvious this game showed that Jimmy G isn't that guy.
No.
And I think a fair comparison would be, you know, when Brady got to his first Super Bowl, Tom Brady wasn't that guy.
Yeah, he
was he had a good running game, and strong defense.
Yeah.
Do you think under the tutelage of Kyle Shanahan, Jimmy G can take it to another level where he can win you a Super Bowl and not he could be the reason you win a Super Bowl opposed to the reason you didn't lose.
Yeah, I do. I think people are too hard on Jimmy G. And at the end of the day, if you look at his track record, right? All we look at is an improvement. Improvements. When he became a starter in San Francisco, how many games they win in a row?
I think it was six.
A full year of starting. Look, they got the Super Bowl, right? He's going to get better. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to learn from this situation. He'll be a better quarterback. He'll be a quarterback that will learn more under Kyle Shanahan. And he'll become I'm not going to say win a Super Bowl because that's still hard to do. Winning a Super Bowl is hard to do. But he'll be a championship-level quarterback, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think it's unfair. I think people are really crapping on Jimmy G. But you got to look at his years as a starting quarterback in this league. And, you know, he's winning, right? Isn't that what you want? He wins. Yeah.
I mean, he wins, but then there was a quarterback at one time who won, and people ran him out of the league. His name was Tim Tebow.
Yeah, but he ain't win to this extent. But
I mean, he didn't win to this extent.
That's a different style of football, though, man. That's not even.
I get it. I get your point.
We
can't just say he wins.
No,
right?
No. Yeah. You know, I get your point. Winning isn't everything, right? There's still some style points into it, right?
Absolutely.
I agree. All right. Was Bradley Beal an all-star game snub? We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got four ramp piece inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this. Immaculate conception, I transform like this, perform like.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole. Ray is out. The NBA All-Star reserves were announced last week. Washington Wizards shooting guard Bradley Beal did not make this year's All-Star team. Was he snubbed?
Yep.
You think? Okay, go ahead. I'm waiting. Why? Why? Tell
me
why.
Here's why. The All-Star game is a individual accomplishment.
Okay.
It's not a team accomplishment. Mm-hmm. It's not based on your team's record. It's based on your individual statistics.
Yeah.
We take the individual statistics of Bradley Beal versus, I don't know, Kyle Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot tell me if we look across Bradley Beal's statistic from a statistical level,
mm-hmm.
Kyle Lowry's stat line is better than Bradley Beal's. It's just to me, it's that simple. I understand. Like, I know people will say, you know, record counts,
yeah.
You know, because it's a determinant factor in how influential you are into the outcome of the game.
Yeah.
I get that. But let's step back for a minute and let's look at what an all-star is. It's an individual whose play, i.e. stats,
mm-hmm.
are the best at his position,
yeah.
in his conference.
No, that's a fair way of looking at it. I just don't like empty stats. Like, that's my Kyle Lowry stats. He averages 19 points a game, and seven assists. That's good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I mean, Bradley Beal is all world scorer. It gets to a point where I think everybody, like fans, everybody, and this is me, and this is I'm in this how I look at an all star. We don't always have to look at just scoring, right? You get what I'm saying? Like, for instance, we can go into – and we'll talk about this in another segment, and I'm just going to bring it up here. If you look at Chris Paul's stats, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have players better stats than Chris Paul.
Yes.
But we all use the eye test, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes you just can't look at just scoring and think that that's
– No, I
that
get
proves,
it.
That proves you as an all-star. You know what I mean?
I get it, but we look at Bradley Beal's stat line, you know, not only the scoring but the assist,
yeah, it's,
and
yeah.
also the rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
Field goal percentage,
yeah.
things of that. Like, he definitely makes an impact on the game, but
yeah.
he makes an impact for a losing franchise,
yeah.
right? So, I totally understand your point,
yeah.
you know, where you bring up, and it was a great point where you bring up Chris Paul,
yeah.
and then you also bring up Kyle Lowry, you know, that team definitely being a surprise team.
Yeah.
But I think the Kyle Lowry vote was more of because people didn't anticipate.
Yeah.
I mean, they won a championship, and people didn't anticipate Toronto as a team being this good this year.
I'll say that to this point, they have a representative in Siakam. So I thought, like, all right, well, you know, that could have been your sole representative, to be honest with you.
Right.
And I get your point about Bradley Beal. I get why Bradley Beal's pissed, because he's putting up numbers. But you got – this is my thing. Like, I love Devin Booker. Like, I love Devin Booker. I think Devin Booker is better than Donovan Mitchell. Like, I think he's better than Donovan Mitchell. It could we agree to disagree, right? Right. But I'm saying, like, but at the end of the day, it's still empty stats. You know what I mean? Like, you could put up 60, you put up 60, 70. I guess for me, it's like, and when you look at a team's talent, I could always go to like James Harden. I use James Harden as an example. Like, before Chris Paul, before Russell Westbrook, right? He was putting up 40, 50 and still winning games with a team that you could arguably say that wasn't that talented compared to other NBA teams. So, like, that's an all-star to me. You know, Bradley Beal scoring 40-some-odd points in the weak Eastern Conference and getting limited wins, I'm like, go ahead.
So, I'm going to push back on your claim that those are empty stats.
Yeah.
They aren't empty stats because we know every team's focal point from a defensive game plan is to stop Bradley Beal.
Very true.
Bradley Beal putting up those numbers to me, where everyone is focusing on him, isn't necessarily empty stats. Where you can make the point that in Toronto with Pascal Siakam being the player that he is, also having Marc Gasol, also having Serge Ibaka, also having OG Ananobi, Fred Van Vliet. There's Kyle Lowry, definitely, even though he's the number two option, they're definitely, you can't just focus on Kyle Lowry.
No, I don't look at stats for Kyle Lowry because I think the team still can win games without Kyle Lowry because of Van Vliet. That's not my argument with Kyle Lowry. You can look at, like, we've seen it, like with the Wizards. Bradley Beal missed games. This team looks sometimes better without Bradley Beal. I'm in terms of winning games. And that's what I'm saying, like, in terms of winning games. And in terms of being efficient at times, he's not – and looking at – I don't like looking at plus and minuses because I'm not into all that stuff. But being efficient watching games, the ball doesn't move as much sometimes with Bradley Beal because, you know, obviously the game is – the game plan is for Bradley Beal to, you know, get buckets. And I get that. But I'm just saying that, you know, to me, it's not like a big-time snub about Bradley Beal because I'm like – You scoring like 30 some odd points. Your team's still losing. Look what Dame Lillard's doing, to be real with you. Like, look what Dame's doing. And they're winning.
They are.
And you can look at and you can say, well, CJ and but really, just CJ and Melo? I mean the Wizards score and the Wizards score a lot. It's not like the Wizards don't score. So it's not like
let's look at it from this perspective. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to play. You play Dame Lillard a little different than you play Bradley Beal because of the threat of CJ McCollum and Carmelo Anthony.
Very true.
Bradley Beal, let's be honest, you are not you're not slumping off.
No. You're focused on Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal, and plus Bradley Beal has the ball
all the time. Look at again, you had a guy in Jordan McRae who dropped 40. Like, I'm a big believer in this league. If you can drop out 40 in a game, you ain't a bum. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. When I look at Bradley Beal, I think Bradley Beal is an all-star caliber player. I'm not saying he's not. But I think you got to get to a certain win total. You know, I'm not saying you got to be over 500. Like, truth be told, like, do you think Trae Young's an all-star?
If we look at Trae Young's statistics, even though he turns the ball over a lot, the guy's averaging, 28-9?
This is my problem. This is my problem with the All-Star team, and this is how it breaks down. I'm going to go when we watch ball, all right?
Okay.
The dudes
– watch ball.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. The dudes when we were younger, the dudes that were going to the All-Star game, they put up numbers, and them teams, they were winning games. They may not have been the greatest. Some of them weren't. Some of them, like Barkley, was struggling in Philadelphia, but he was voted in. Let's be real. He was voted in. Barkley was struggling in Philadelphia, but he was an all-star because you could see the importance of Barkley. If you took him out the lineup, you see a difference.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? That's my thing. You take this dude out the lineup, you see a dramatic difference. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like, when I look at Bradley Beal, you take him out the lineup, in terms of wins or losses, there isn't a dramatic difference. right? You take, now if you take James Harden, like I'm looking for somebody. You take, to be real with you, and this is to your argument, you take Lowry out the lineup, it's not a big difference. I'm gonna be real with you. It's not a big difference.
It's not.
It's not a big difference.
That's why my point is, mm-hmm. that's why Bradley Beal deserves to be in the All-Star right. game more than Kyle Lowry. I mean, the gift of the curse because Kyle Lowry plays on such a good team
with a lot
of talent, and you take them away, they still be successful. Yeah, it's the gift
of
the curse.
Why is nobody crying about Zach LaVine?
Zach LaVine's been injured. He's had some injuries.
Yeah, he's played most of the season. Like, he's like Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal hasn't played that. He's been hurt just as much as Zach LaVine. And Zach LaVine's been more healthier than Bradley Beal.
That's true. But, you know, I think Bradley Beal's been, his stat line, he's been far more fit.
He's been scoring. He's been scoring.
Yeah, he's been scoring.
He's been scoring. No, it's a good conversation. I don't have an issue with Bradley Beal. I think Bradley Beal is deserving of an All-Star bid. I just don't like the term snub means like it's how dare you type of thing. And I'm like, it's not a how dare you situation. It's more of a, it would be good for him to make the All-Star team. You know what I mean? That's how I look at it. Anyway, we'll continue. We'll talk about the rest of the NBA All-Star reserves after the break. Listen to the Urban Sports Team.
For ages. You dig? Deuces.
Nothing's cooler than like the NBA song, man. NBA on NBC.
Yeah, that music is very. It takes me back to my childhood.
It does, man.
You know, when I used to watch basketball, and then also another set of music that takes me back to my childhood is the Bulls when they used to do the announcement.
Yeah, I know. I ain't gonna lie. You know, me not liking Michael Jordan and whatnot, but still at the same time, I won't lie to you. It does remind you. It does take you back to your childhood when you hear like that Bulls announcer. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I ain't gonna lie. You should give me hype too. I'm not gonna lie.
Absolutely.
You know, remember back in the day when NBA get like playoff games could be in the afternoon?
Yeah, I used to love
them jerks, man.
Like Saturday, you could sit in the house and you could watch basketball all day from the afternoon to the night.
It's insane, man. All right, looking at the NBA All-Star reserves, do you have an issue with the reserves on the East and West, other than the ones that we just said?
Other than the Bradley Beal.
If you want to look at this right here, I'll let you look at it.
I really don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really don't. I don't have the only thing I will say is I do believe that Jimmy Butler should have been starting over Trae Young. Yeah, that's just my personal opinion.
Sure.
I love the inclusion of Bam because he's fully deserving.
Yeah.
Sabonis. Yeah, like
I'm glad he got it. I was scared.
I was definitely concerned for him because he plays in Indiana.
Yeah, exactly.
Who really watches? Yeah. You know, no one really stays up to mm-hmm. watch Indiana because sure. they lack that sexy star appeal, mm-hmm. right? But he's having a fantastic year. Chris Middleton, I understand why he's on the All-Star team.
He had a 50 number, man.
I get it, and I understand. I'm happy for Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
The Joker, Jokic.
I know what his year hasn't been as good as last year, but he's an All-Star. He's an All-Star type of player.
And you know, this goes to empty stats.
Yeah.
Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
On the All-Star team.
Yeah, I think because they won it. Yeah, I agree. But again, he's winning. They're in contention for
the
eighth spot.
They're in contention. They're four games out of the eighth spot.
I think it's a little different. I mean, I get what you're saying. You're right. You know what I mean? Like, you're not putting your team over the top in terms of with those numbers because his numbers are crazy.
His numbers are crazy. Good. Yeah.
But you would think that with those numbers that this team would be, you know, maybe two games under 500. This is a dude that I think that deserves to make it. I mean, I mentioned Devin Booker. I think Devin Booker is a better ball. It is what it is. We can argue that, whatever. But I think Devin Booker is just as – if you put Devin Booker on Utah, it would be a problem. I think
that's your opinion, and you're entitled.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say a guy I think deserves to is a rookie. I think John Morant deserves to be an all-star. I think Memphis is the same thing we talk about. No one thought Memphis was going to be the eighth spot. But right now, I believe they're the eighth spot
now. Yes, they are.
And like battling like a game under 500 last time I checked. No one thought that. You know what I mean? This rookie has came in and has killed the league. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like we talked about Chris Paul. Just like I talked about Chris Paul. You injected John Morant, and now this team is fighting for a postseason. You know what I'm saying? I'm not taking out Chris Paul because I love the value of Chris Paul. I'll tell anybody. I'm debating this on Twitter. I said, you take Chris Paul off the Thunder, this team isn't even close to making the postseason. They're 10 games over 500. That's how good Chris Paul is. Same thing with John Morant. You take him off of the Grizzlies, this team ain't even sniffing anything. You know what I'm saying? So
that's why it's time to ship Chris Paul out of town if you OKC.
Oh, you think you trade him?
I mean, his trade value is never be higher. At this age, it'll never be higher.
Yeah. I mean, but it's amazing, though, right? Like, everybody had looked at him like he's done. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the thing about Chris Paul, and I want to make sure people understand, is that everywhere Chris Paul has gone, everywhere, the dude's improved the squad. You know what I mean?
He has.
Everywhere.
He definitely has.
Mm-hmm. So you look at, like, all the talk with James Harden, like, think about the Houston Rockets team. When he went down with that, I think it was a hamstring injury in the series against the Golden State Warriors, everyone was saying, you know, if Chris Paul was healthy, they would have beat the Warriors that year. You know what I'm saying? Then the following year, then everybody tried to turn their back on Chris Paul. It's all we did with the Hornets.
Yes.
Back then, Chris Paul played for him. Look how with Tyson Chandler, they had the number one seed in the East for a while.
Yeah, and they actually went to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with Chris Paul. So you look at what Chris Paul has done with every organization. Now OKC, every organization, Chris Paul has improved the franchise. So, I mean, he's an amazing player, man.
He is. I personally believe he'll go down as one of the best point guards ever.
Mm-hmm.
You ask me.
Yeah.
But you know, the knock on him is always going to be that, you know, wherever he's gone, there's been some turmoil in the locker room, mm-hmm. and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And he's never been able to take his team over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Nah, I agree. I mean, that's always going to be a thing, and people like the thing about not putting the team over and taking them over the top. I mean, he produces in those games. I mean, in those series, because we're talking about the postseason, he produces. It's not really on him. You know what I mean? Like with the Clippers, you look at Blake Griffin didn't show out, right? You looked at with the Rockets, he got hurt. You dig what I'm saying? Like he got hurt, and then you know, and James Harden doesn't play the same in the postseason because the referees call the games differently, right? New Orleans Hornets at the time, shoot, that he was a one man team throwing lobs to Tyson Chandler and he played for the Warriors. David West. Thank you, David West. So I mean, if you look and there again, David West didn't show out. So when you look at Chris Paul, if you look at the stats, he produced in postseason play. I'm gonna let you go.
Sorry for that long, awkward pause.
I'm gonna let you go on that thing out, bro.
You know me. I'm usually in the bed at this time.
You know what I'm saying? But it is what it is. I'm a big fan of Chris Paul. But John Morant, though, man. If someone goes down with an injury, I would love to see John Morant in the All-Star game. Is he in the dunk contest?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I hope he is, man. Because you saw he almost did a Kevin Love. All right. Ryan Zimmerman will be back with the Nats. Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats will join the show after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. Touch them other hips, lay them down. Pull my hips, what? Touch them other hips, lay them down. Pull my hips, what? Touch them other hips, I ride for my hips.
Touch the mother hips, lay them down. Pull my hips, what? Touch the mother hips, I ride for my hips. I die. I'm the soldier on the tank with the big, big dogs. And if anybody messes with Snoop Doggy Dog, I'ma go. His people put his name on the wall. And everywhere I go, I got Mr. Magic there. Because I know that boy don't care. He'll have that red stuff pouring out your hair. Clef any given time, clef any, anywhere. Make him bleed is the motto that I live by. With me, it's a must. You die. Them haters might run, but them haters can't hide. It's like shooting yourself. It's a suicide. Exhale, got to be hitting hard like Bird Boys. Burning, know you, know I'm as big hurt. Just like Soulja Slim, he'll put you in the dirt and have your picture on front of a t-shirt. And when I make moves, I got 100 soldiers.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole. Ray Jeezy is out. All right, we got a special one for you, man. You know, Ryan Zimmerman's back, but I want to make sure I bring in my man in. Right now, we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, well, how's it going, man?
Everything's going good. I have Will T here all, as well.
How's it going, Kevin?
Hey, Will T.
All right, so, Kevin, what was your initial reaction when you heard that the Washington Nationals re-signed Ryan Zimmerman to a one-year, $2 million deal?
I think in terms of the money they spent, it's not bad. But at the same time, you'd have a lot of kind of veteran infielders. I'm not sure how the playing time is going to shake out. You know, I guess the good thing would be if there's an injury, they have enough depth to sustain an injury or two. But, you know, right now when you look at you have Zim, you have James, Howie, Starlin Castro, Asdrubal Cabrera, and Carter Kieboom. I don't know how many players I just counted, but it's more than the four positions, you know, they have to play. So, you know, I think I think for a fan perspective, it's probably good they brought him back. He's, you know, the longest tenured Nat. But in terms of, you know, bringing him back for 300 at bats or 400 at bats, I don't know if it's going to work. You know, I don't know if they have the playing time for him.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have Talk Nats Kevin Nibley on the line. So, what do you think his role will be with the team? Do you think he'll be the starting first baseman?
You know, I think the one thing he has to offer still is he does hit left-handed pitching very well. I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but I want to say last year his OPS was around 950, 960, something like that. So he still can really hit left-handed pitching. So hopefully they'll use him in a platoon against left-handers, you know, and then things will bat against righties. And, you know, maybe they can move. You know, Ryan, unfortunately, can only play first. So he, you know, would basically be the first baseman against left-handers. You know, Thames can play the outfield, so maybe they could get them both in the lineup. If you want to give Eaton or Soto a day off, and, you know, Howie could go to second base. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a starter. I don't think they're going to do that. I think if I had to guess, you know, he'll probably be in there for 200 to 300 at bats. I mean, and unfortunately, Ryan, he does tend to get injured every season. I mean, nothing against the guy, but it's happened that way every year except for 2017. So yeah, I think it's kind of a part-time thing. The only thing I worry about is the Nats fan is Ryan going to expect to play 5 days a week, you know, 4 or 5 days a week? Because I, you know, that's what could cause some problems if that's what he's expecting.
Hey, Ryan. Kevin, excuse me. I'm thinking of talking about Ryan Zimmerman. Kevin, let me ask you this. We all know that, you know, Ryan Zimmerman go down as a Washington Nats icon. You know, he's longest tenured player in the history of this franchise. But what's truly the upside of having a guy at this point who can't stay healthy taken away at bats from a younger player if you're the Nats and you're trying to develop for the long term?
That's a great question. And to be honest, I'm not sure. You know, to be fair to Ryan, he still does have something to give when he's hot. You know, he did hit a home run against Garrett Cole in the World Series. It was pretty big. He hit a home run in Game 4 against the Dodgers. It was pretty big. So it's not like he's totally washed up, but yes, I mean, he can stay healthy and he can barely play. So I agree with you. I don't really see the upside, like put it this way, if he wasn't Ryan Zimmerman, if he was just like first baseman X and he didn't have all this history with the Nats, of course they wouldn't have signed him for the season. There's no way. But, you know, I think they found a spot for him because he does have all that history and they're hoping, you know, the one good thing would be if there are some injuries, which there always are, you know, you do have the depth to survive that. You know, you're not going to have Wilmer Defoe as your starting, you know, third baseman or shortstop for 80 games if someone gets hurt, because at least they have enough veterans there to cover some injuries. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see that opening day lineup will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if Ryan is the starting first baseman, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how they use Thames, because Thames is amazing against right-handers. The Brewers last year, and they're paying him more than Ryan. Mm. So, I would expect Thames to be the starter more often than not at first base, but we'll just have to see how that happens.
Right. You made a great point. You know, if Ryan Zimmerman wasn't Ryan Zimmerman, let's say he was Brian Dozer, he wouldn't be on this team now. But now he's going to play, you know, and you also made another great point, you know, will Ryan Zimmerman want to play five games out of the week? But another question from you, from a protection standpoint for Juan Soto in the lineup, you know, with Ryan Zimmerman, where will Ryan Zimmerman bat when he does play? Where do you think he'll bat? Do you think he'll bat 4, 5? Where at this advanced stage of his career?
I think it'd be a little lower. The lineup, assuming there's no like major late move and they don't do anything crazy and this roster is the roster they start the season with. I don't know. Because I don't even know if they have a third place hitter right now. You can move Trey Turner down and maybe try to move Robles up in the first two. I don't know. But if it was me managing, God forbid, I probably would move Soto up to 3, and I might kind of, depending on the right handedness of the pitcher, I might either keep Allie behind him in the 4-hole, or I'd have, if you're going against the righty, I'd put Thames behind him in the 4-hole. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have 2 lefties. But, you know, with Ryan, I think you're looking at more of a 6 or 7-hole hitter, I would think. You know, hopefully, I don't know. I mean, if Dusty Baker was back managing, maybe Ryan would be hitting 4th behind Soto. I don't know. But, you know, Dave Martinez didn't really hit him that high last year. So I don't think I hope that's not the plan, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
So besides play, what does Zimmerman bring to the clubhouse?
He obviously must, you know, we don't work there. We don't know. We're baseball nerds and we look at the stats and of course the stats say, like, why would you bring this guy back? You mm-hmm. know, cut him loose. He's done his time and blah, blah, blah. But you know, he obviously must bring something to the dugout. If they are bringing him back, he must, you know, and you can never state that. I mean, look at the Nats last year. They were not a good team, and all of a sudden, you know, you got Gerard Parr doing a baby shark, and all these guys, you know, Dozier's taking his shirt off, and Keaton and Kendrick are doing the truck thing, and all of a sudden they win the World Series. So if Ryan does bring something to the clubhouse, you know, for $2 million, that's probably worth it, you know, if it can kind of keep the mood good and get them in a place where maybe they could try to defend the title.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm happy that Ryan's back, though. I think we all should be happy that Ryan's back. I think that, you know, it brings some type of, as an individual who's a Baltimore Oriole fan, grew up watching Cal Ripken Jr., it's something about having a guy that started his whole career with you and ending his career there. You know what I mean? Like, he wants to play baseball.
Yeah.
It's not an expensive deal. And who knows? You know, one thing about sports and even Zimmerman, you know, some people have always rolled him off and he gets hot. He may get hot, and then he may make it hard on Davey to say, you know what, you have to keep me in the lineup. So hopefully that does happen for this team.
It's true. I mean, I'm not sure exactly, but I want to say Ryan's younger than Howie. Mm-hmm. I think he might be younger than Struble. I think he's 35. I obviously don't have in front of me, but it's not like we're talking about a guy. He's younger than Max, I think. We're not talking about a guy, you know, he's not 42. He's mm-hmm. not Fernando Rodney. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, there is a chance. You know, 2017, for whatever reason, he was healthy that year. And he was amazing.
Yeah.
He carried the team. And he did hit 4th behind Harper, and he deserved to hit 4th behind Harper. So, you know, maybe he does have one last kind of magic season left in him. And, you know, so if that happens, then I think his incentives could go up to $5 million. But, you know, say he has one last amazing year, you're only paying $5 million for that. And say he turns into just kind of a happy bench guy like Parr was last year, you know, then for $2 million, that's not so bad. Yeah. You know, so it's not a bad move, but the only way it could be a bad move is if he expects to start most of the games, and then it creates kind of a bottleneck in terms of getting getting Thames and Castro and Howie and all these other guys who might be a little bit better at this point into the lineup.
No, I definitely agree. So, hey, Kev, before I let you go, let our listeners know how they can catch your content and how they can catch you on social media.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Visit us. We're at Talk Nats Podcast. I think we'll have a new one probably soon during some training.
Awesome.
And go to talknats.com. It is the coolest place on the internet to get really deep into being a nerd about the Nats, and we're all there every day. And come join us and talk about the team.
Well, definitely, it's a good time to be a Nats fan. Get an opportunity to defend your defend the championship. So, always a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Kev. I appreciate you.
Yeah, always, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. That is Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats. Check him out. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, Talk Nats, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, you name it. Anything podcasts are being heard. All right. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. We'll see about that time.
Yeah, man, it's that time, man. Once again, everyone who took the time to listen to the show live or via our podcast, we want to thank you. Past 10 years in.
Yeah, man.
We appreciate the support.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week.
All right. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Giddy.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.